Welcome to HN Pod, your daily audio deep dive into the top stories, trends, and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is Sunday, July 26, 2026, and this is episode 468. As always, we are bringing you the best of yesterday's internet, covering the top stories from July 25th.
We have a really packed and diverse show today, Mike. We are going to look at a potential massive change to Android that could kill off a whole ecosystem of power user apps. We also have an inspiring story about math communicator Hannah Fry winning the Liavati Prize, and a fascinating essay comparing open-weight AI to the rise of Kubernetes.
Plus, we will dive into a new website that calls out companies for ghosting job candidates. And we will finish up with a wild Wall Street Journal report about a major farm calling the White House to try and delay a food safety recall.
Let us jump right into it with our top story, which pulled in 900 points. The headline is, Android may soon restrict on-device ADB. This comes from the KitsuMed blog, written by a developer who goes by ShesCS911 on Hacker News.
Right. So for some context, ADB stands for Android Debug Bridge. It is a command line tool that lets developers communicate with a device. But in recent years, a tool called Shizuku has become incredibly popular. Shizuku basically uses on-device or wireless ADB to grant elevated permissions to certain apps without requiring the user to fully root their phone.
Exactly. It's this amazing middle ground. You don't have to void your warranty or break your banking apps by rooting your phone, but you can still run powerful tools. The author of this blog post actually developed a Shizuku-based call recording app to help with their own disabilities. But now, based on an ongoing feature request in the Google Issue Tracker, it looks like Google is planning to restrict these loopback ADB connections to protect against bad actors.
The Hacker News comments on this were incredibly fiery. A lot of people feel like this is just another example of the industry using security as an excuse to lock down devices. A user named Microtonal pointed out that this attack vector requires a user to manually enable developer settings and turn on remote ADB, so it's not a realistic threat for 99.9% of users, and the remaining 0.1% know exactly what they are doing.
That sparked a massive thread about security fatigue. A user named Zap the Impaler went on this epic rant that resonated with so many people. They talked about how security has become a totalizing value that trumps convenience, user-friendliness, and ownership. They listed everything from being logged out of trivial sites every few hours to the nightmare of setting up OAuth for a headless device, to those Remember Me for 30 Days checkboxes that literally never work.
Oh man, the 30-day checkbox is the biggest lie in modern tech. But a user named Anthony Mouse offered a really interesting heuristic for this. They said, to tell if a security measure is reasonable, ask if it is an open standard that anyone can permissionlessly implement, like TOTP. If the answer is no, you are probably dealing with someone trying to build a walled garden.
The phrase that kept coming up in the thread was cui bono, who benefits? A lot of developers feel like Google locking down on-device ADB is not really about protecting grandma from malware, but about protecting their own ecosystem control. It is a tough balance, but it really feels like the era of the hackable smartphone is slipping away.
It really does. Let us shift gears to something a bit more uplifting. Our next story got 571 points, and it is an announcement from Cambridge University. Professor Hannah Fry has won the Liavati Prize for 2026 for mathematics outreach.
Hannah Fry is just brilliant. If you've ever watched Numberphile on YouTube or seen her TED Talks, you know how contagious her enthusiasm for math is. The Liavati Prize is the highest international award for public engagement in mathematics, so this is incredibly well-deserved.
What I loved about the Hacker News thread was the mix of personal anecdotes and deep respect for her work. A user named Kit D brought up her 2018 BBC program called Contagion. In that show, she modeled a virus outbreak among volunteers in a UK town called Haslemere using a Bluetooth proximity app.
And here's the crazy part. Guess which town contained the UK's actual COVID patient zero just over a year later? Haslemere.
It is wild. Someone else mentioned she revealed on a podcast that they only picked that town because their budget was so low they had to sleep over at a crew member's family house there. But it shows how accurate epidemiological science can be. The Bluetooth tracking app they used in the 2018 documentary was basically a prototype for the exact contact tracing apps the NHS and Apple and Google rolled out in 2020.
Another great detail from the comments is about her academic journey. A user pointed out that Hannah Fry actually did not get into Cambridge for her undergraduate math degree. She went to University College London instead, which is still a great school, but now she is a math professor at Cambridge. It is a great reminder that early rejections do not define your whole career.
Definitely. And speaking of careers in the tech landscape, our third story is a fantastic piece of analysis by Toby Knaup. It got 356 points, titled "Openweight AI is Having Its Kubernetes Moment. Let Us Not Ruin It."
Toby has a really unique perspective here. He co-founded Mesosphere back in 2013, which built a platform around Apache Mesos. They were flying high until Kubernetes came along and completely disrupted them. He writes that Kubernetes did not win just because it was open source. It won because it became a neutral substrate that everyone, from cloud providers to enterprise vendors, could build on. Once an open platform becomes the industry's center of gravity, no single vendor can match the combined rate of innovation around it.
And Toby argues that AI is right at that exact tipping point today, but he makes a crucial distinction. He calls them open weight models, not open source. You can download the trained parameters of models like Llama or Qwen, but you do not get the training data. Even so, this is enough to create an ecosystem. We are seeing quantized weights for different chips, fine tunes for coding and medicine, and serving stocks like VLLM and Llama.
The Hacker News discussion quickly turned to the regulatory threats hanging over this ecosystem. Toby's article mentions that leading AI labs are constantly lobbying the US administration to ban open source models, often using national security and Chinese models as the boogeyman.
Yeah, a user named Ozgung pointed out the technical absurdity of trying to ban a Chinese model. Weights are literally just numbers. You can't assign a country of origin to a massive matrix of floating point numbers. If you take a model, add a few blank layers, and fine-tune it a tiny bit, the checksums change completely.
Which leads to the First Amendment debate. People brought up the crypto wars of the 1990s, specifically the Bernstein case, where source code was ruled to be protected speech. If code is speech, are model weights speech? Can the government make certain numbers illegal to possess?
It is a fascinating legal question. But as user Sotvik Pendam noted, it might not even go to court. The US government could just put foreign open model companies on the entity list. That creates a chilling effect. Even if you can't technically prove where a model came from, massive US companies are not going to risk massive fines. They will just default to using closed models from OpenAI or Anthropic to be safe, which entrenches the monopolies even further.
It is a classic case of regulatory capture disguised as safety. The big labs want to pull up the ladder behind them. It is definitely a space we will be watching closely.
Speaking of corporate bureaucracy, let us talk about the job market. Our next story, with 353 points, is simply a link to a new website called DidTheyGhostYou.com.
This site is exactly what it sounds like. It is a place for job seekers to report companies that ghosted them after an interview. The job market has been so brutal lately, and the lack of basic professional courtesy from employers has really struck a nerve on Hacker News.
The comments turned into this hilarious and depressing leaderboard of the longest and shortest rejection times. A user named Indrora shared their personal stats. The longest wait for a rejection? DocuSign, which took 4 years to get back to them. Nintendo took 34 months. Google took 30 months.
4 years. Imagine getting a rejection email for a job you applied to before the last presidential election. But Indrora also had a list of the shortest turnarounds. The absolute winner was Cloudflare, with a time of -2 minutes.
Wait. -2 minutes? How does that even work, Sarah?
So they were filling out the application, and before they even hit submit, they received an email thanking them for applying, but saying they were not a good fit. Another user chimed in and said the same thing happened to them because the system parsed their uploaded resume, checked for keywords, and instantly rejected them while they were still typing in the manual fields on the next page.
That is so dystopian. But there was also a really insightful comment from someone who got ghosted by Google back in 2004. They followed up for weeks and heard nothing. Years later, they got hired, looked up that original recruiter, and realized the recruiter had been laid off the exact day they were supposed to schedule the phone screen.
That happens so much. Half the time, it is not malicious. It is just a broken applicant tracking system or a recruiter getting fired, and the candidate just falls into a black hole. There was also a big debate in the thread about companies asking for references. A lot of developers feel like if a company cannot figure out if you are good at your job after 5 rounds of technical interviews, calling your former manager is not going to help. Plus, many corporate policies explicitly forbid employees from giving references anyway.
It just highlights how broken the hiring pipeline is right now. All right, let us move to our final story for today, which got 319 points. It's a Wall Street Journal piece titled "Taylor Farms Called White House to Try to Delay Cyclospora Recall."
This is a really disturbing look at food safety and political influence. Basically, there was a Cyclospora outbreak, which is a nasty parasite that causes severe intestinal issues. The FDA traced it back to shredded iceberg lettuce from Taylor Farms facilities in Mexico.
But here's the kicker. Taylor Farms got a false positive on one of their own internal lab samples, even though the FDA said this false positive did not change the overwhelming epidemiological data pointing to their lettuce. Taylor Farms used it as leverage. They literally called the White House to try and get the recall delayed or canceled.
The Hacker News comments were a mix of outrage and dark humor about institutional rot. A user named Ashleen brought up the terrifying prospect of prion diseases, pointing out that if this is how we handle a parasite that gives you diarrhea, how can we trust the meat supply against things that take a decade to show symptoms?
And because this is 2026, the comments inevitably turned to the current political landscape. Someone joked about the current Secretary of Health and Human Services, referencing RFK Jr., saying we have a guy with a literal brainworm in charge of health policy, loosening rules so the rest of us can get brainworms too.
Yeah, the toxoplasmosis jokes were flying. Someone pointed out that toxoplasmosis makes mice less scared of cats and joked that maybe the human version just encourages poor public health policies. But underneath the jokes, there is a real frustration. The idea that a massive corporation can just pick up the phone, call the executive branch, and try to bypass the FDA's scientific consensus is a textbook example of regulatory capture.
It really is. Whether it's tech monopolies trying to ban OpenAI models or agricultural giants trying to stop food recalls, the theme of today's episode seems to be the constant battle between public interest and corporate power.
That is a great way to summarize it, Mike. And that brings us to the end of today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in to HN Pod.
If you enjoyed the conversation, make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We will be back tomorrow to break down the next batch of top stories from Hacker News.
Until then, keep building, keep questioning, and maybe double check where your lettuce comes from. Have a great day, everyone.